Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to the Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. In this episode, we're going to take a look at what the Bible has to say about creation. Does it cohere with science? Does it dovetail with science? We believe it does. We believe it does. So we'll look at the outline of the creation story from a bird's eye point of view. We'll also look at some modern scientific discoveries and how they actually help to shed light and enhance in some ways what God says about creation and about us in the scriptures. You know, the Bible kind of gives us that bird's eye view, that big picture view about why we are here, where we came from, and what is the meaning and purpose of our lives. The Bible does not intend to be a book of science, especially when it comes to the creation narratives. That's not what it's all about. Keep in mind that when it comes to the creation account in Genesis, those who were responsible for, you know, collecting those materials, putting it together, writing it, were not there when God created the universe. They didn't have, a smartphone camera set up to record everything, or a GoPro or something like that. So what we have here is a reflection on the meaning of creation and its purpose. So really, this is what faith tells us. Faith tells us why God made us. What is the meaning and purpose of our lives? Science tells us how things work in God's creation, how God did it. And there really is no conflict there, properly understood. So before we get into some recent scientific discoveries that help shed light on the scriptures and the creation story there, let's take a look at what the Bible has to tell us about creation. The Bible's creation story makes a lot more sense when you put it in context and compare it to other creation stories that were floating around at the time that Genesis was written, competing creation stories, if you will, from other groups, other societies, other people groups in the ancient Near East, outside of the Israelites. There are stories from Egypt about creation, the Sumerians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and all of them have a way different take on creation than does the Bible. For example, in an Egyptian creation story, there's a defeat of a great dragon, which is kind of interesting because that's how Satan is described in the Bible. But usually there is a series of battles after which some sort of a hierarchy of quote-unquote gods emerges. There's a Babylonian creation epic called the Enuma Elish. Perhaps you've heard of that. And Enuma Elish means win on high. And that's those words appear in the text. That's probably the best-known creation story outside of the book of Genesis. And in that story, there is a battle between parent gods, Apsu and Tiamat, and younger gods led by Marduk, who slays Tiamat and her commander, Kingu. From Tiamat, he forms the sky and the sea, and from the blood of Kingu, he creates people. As a reward for doing all of this, Marduk is given lordship over the entire universe. Now, this sounds an awful lot like Greek mythology. You know, how the Titans were defeated at the hands of the Olympian gods led by Zeus. So what's really going on here, and what these stories have in common is this. The gods themselves belong to the creation. There is no god in these other creation stories that isn't part of the creation itself. Now that is, in fact, where these stories and the Bible part ways. Because in the scriptural creation story in the book of Genesis, we know, and it is revealed to us, that there is only one true God. There is only one God, not many gods, and this one powerful creator God made everything that exists. There's no fighting, there's no, titanic battles, if you will. God makes everything from nothing. He doesn't use pre-existing matter or materials left over from battles to make the heavens and the earth. So there's one powerful creator God. Creation is different from this powerful creator God. He is not to be equated with his own creation. And the third thing is, according to the book of Genesis, that God creates the heavens and the earth in a very orderly and systematic way. And every time he creates something, whether it's the heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, the stars, the waters and all that live in it, the earth and all that lives on the earth, all the animals, God always says it was good. And then, at the very, very end of everything, after all is created, including human beings, God says that it is very good. Genesis 1:31. Now, really, the crowning achievement of creation, according to the scriptures, is the creation of the human person. Humans have an absolutely unique place in creation, being the last creatures that God created. He kind of saved the best for last. And some say, well, woman was created after man, so he really saved the best for last. But that's really a focal point of the Genesis story, that human persons are the crown of God's creation. So this is it. God blesses human beings. He gives them the earth to care for, and he commands them to be fruitful and multiply. God provides this wonderful home for people to live in and all his creatures to live in. It's a place of health, it's a place of beauty, it's a place of wonder, and it's a place where they can grow, not only physically, but also intellectually and spiritually, really flourish. So God has a design. He has a plan for his creation. And he really wants us to flourish. He wants us to achieve an end. We would say as Catholics that he ultimately wants us to be saints. Yes, he wants us to live with him forever in a new heavens and a new earth, which is coming in the future. But for right now, he has provided us with, in the words of one writer, a privileged planet on which to live and to find fulfillment and indeed to find the God who created us. Now, many people doubt that there is a powerful creator God for various reasons. We'll have to talk about this on another program. There is, of course, the problem of evil. Why do natural disasters occur? Why do innocent people suffer? Why do children die? And to some people, including a lot of atheists, that is reason enough not to believe in the God of the Bible. Either God is all-powerful and he chooses not to do anything about evil, or he's not powerful enough to prevent it in the first place. As one person said, if God is there, then he doesn't care. Well, this is simply not true. And especially in the person and the life of Jesus Christ, we do see how God cares for us and even experiences suffering himself. He's not aloof from the suffering of his creatures. The Bible does talk about the problem of evil and where it comes from. And that's something that we'll have to get into on a separate episode, but it by no means disproves the existence of God. Actually, at the end of the day, it's really, in my opinion, the only good argument that atheists have is this problem of evil. But as we'll see one day, very, very soon, we can turn this around for the good and to show that the God of the Bible really does exist. This isn't an obstacle. This is, in fact, how he made the world. He made the world with freedom, and tragically, some people use their freedom to turn away from God. Well, there's the problem of evil, but there's also the problem of good, as Dr. Craig Evans likes to say. That needs to be explained, too. Why is the world so beautiful? Why do people do altruistic things? Why do they even give their lives sometimes for others, even strangers that they don't know? Why is it that we can appreciate and care for beautiful things? Why is it that we take care of those who are sick? There has to be an explanation for the good as well as the bad. And I think the scriptures do a really good job of presenting that too. And really, so does modern science. All the developments that we've seen lately, far from disproving the scriptural account of what our faith tells us, it actually highlights it and enhances our knowledge of God and creation in very important ways. As Dr. Craig Evans likes to say, and I'll quote him from his book, God Speaks, "The Bible begins with the beginning itself. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," Genesis 1:1. Modern science at one time rejected the idea of a beginning, holding instead to the view that the universe was eternal. And by the way, just a sidebar here, that is known as the steady state hypothesis, that the universe kind of always existed and just kind of kept on going. Back to Dr. Evans' quote here. In the 1950s and 1960s, however, scientists recognized that the universe did indeed have a beginning, popularly called the Big Bang, and that physical matter is not eternal. This discovery created a problem for atheists because scientists know that something cannot come from nothing. Not surprisingly, a growing number of scientists now believe that some powerful and intelligent being initiated or created the universe. Ongoing scientific research, thanks in large part to the Hubble telescope, has shown how amazing our solar system is and how unique the planet Earth is. Not only is our planet perfectly suitable for complex life, but it is perfect in design and location to enable intelligent life to study the universe. The odds for all of this to have happened by chance are extremely slight, perhaps non-existent. So let's think about this quote just for a minute. Yes, there were some scientists who held to this steady state hypothesis about the universe, that it always kind of existed, it was always there. Well, the Big Bang kind of blew a huge hole in that theory. And of course, the Big Bang theory was created by a Catholic priest who was also a scientist, Father George Lemaître. A lot of people don't know that. The church and science are not opposed in any way, shape, or form. And some of the greatest scientists in all of human history have actually been Catholics. Now, this Big Bang and the evidence for it has been a problem for atheists, for materialists who want to posit that there is no creator. And so what they will often do in response to this is that they'll try to go back to some form of the steady state belief, you know, that hey, maybe the universe always did exist. But the problem is that's kind of been debunked by modern science. Sometimes they'll try to play a philosophical trick and they'll say, well, what do you mean by nothing? You know, that God created the world out of nothing. Maybe nothing was really something after all. Well, this is nonsense, pure nonsense. Here's another one, and you might have heard about this. This gets in the news a lot. Some atheist scientists try to hypothesize that there were an endless number, an infinite number, of failed universes that just didn't take root before our own got going and really flourished. This is known as the multiverse theory. Perhaps you've heard of this, that there are many, many different universes that have existed. Most of them didn't work out, but this one did. Well, here's the problem. As Craig Evans says, this is nothing more than science fiction. Okay, you know, maybe in Marvel comics and in Marvel movies, there are multiverses, but not in reality. There is no evidence for this, none whatsoever. So the irony is they're not going with the established science that has been created by the Big Bang Theory, which does imply that the universe had a definite beginning point and that it was created out of nothing. That strongly implies that something, or rather someone, created it, because something can't come from nothing. This universe is fine-tuned for human life. And it's amazing. And not only is that the case, but it's not as if the universe is simply set up just for us to exist. We have sights, sounds, aromas, you know, tastes, you know, things that we really don't need. It goes beyond the necessity. It's kind of an extra gift. This points us to a loving God who wants to give his people gifts. As the Bible says, The heavens are declaring the glory of God. The firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day after day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. This is incredible. All the beautiful things in creation that we can really appreciate and that speak to a loving and creative God. So, as we talked about before, the high point of creation, the very pinnacle of creation, is humanity. And again, modern science shows us just how fine-tuned the universe is for us to be nurtured and to grow. Allow me to quote Dr. Evans again. He says, "Thanks to modern science, we can now appreciate how well-made, protective, and nurturing our planet is. Our planet is warmed by a sun that is just the right size, a sun that emits higher than average photonic energy, but lower than average levels of dangerous radiation. This means that our sun has what it takes to support life, but at the same time not destroy it. Our planet and the other planets in our solar system have stable orbits. Irregular orbits, like the erratic orbits of planets in other solar systems, would pose great danger to life on planet Earth. Our planet is protected by several large gaseous planets, such as Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, that shield us from catastrophic impacts by asteroids. Our planet has an optimal rotation, an ideal tilt of its axis, and an orbiting moon that is just the right distance from the Earth, travels at an optimal speed, energizes our tides, and stabilizes the Earth's rotation. It is this fine-tuning of our world that weighs so heavily against atheistic theories of random chance. There is even more fine-tuning to be considered. The planet Earth has a liquid, molten center that permits continental drift and tectonic plate movement. Without this feature, we would have no mountains. In fact, most, if not all, of the land on our planet would be underwater if it were not for the movements of land masses. Our planet's core is highly metallic, which creates our magnetic poles, which stabilize our atmosphere and, together with our atmosphere, protect us from deadly radiation from outer space and our own sun. In addition, our planet has enormous quantities of water, without which complex life would not be possible. These are only some of the most important features of our life-sustaining planet. There are many more, and all of these amazing features underscore the words spoken long ago, "And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good." Genesis 1:31. Again, as we said before, the human being is the high point of God's creation. There's really nothing like us. We may be made of essentially the same stuff from which many animals are made, but in all the important ways we are vastly different. Scientists sometimes point out that apes and chimpanzees are very close to humans, with a DNA overlap of approximately 96%. True enough, but the 4% makes all the difference in the world. The brains of apes and chimpanzees do not possess the capacity for language and abstract thought. No ape wonders what life is all about. No chimpanzee asks where he came from and what the future holds. In short, apes and chimpanzees do not ask the big questions. They don't even know that there are questions to ask. Humans are distinctive, too, in their appreciation of beauty. Only humans are aware of the beauty of sight and sound, and then in a variety of ways attempt to imitate, interpret, and expand upon it. No ape has ever composed a symphony or endeavored to paint a portrait. No ape has grappled with moral issues or pondered what is right and wrong, but humans do all of these things. Humans are aware of the wonder of the world. Humans are moral and spiritual beings. Humans rejoice in what is good, but are troubled by evil. Humans wonder where God is in all of this. No animal gives a moment's thought to any of these things. The psalmist was so impressed with the wonder of human life that he declared to God, "I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, My soul knows it very, very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in the secret place, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. Psalm 139, verses 14 to 16. There is great truth in this passage. End of quote. So Dr. Evans really points out a lot of fascinating things there. And, you know, some of the atheists that are out there in society, the so-called new atheists, like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, well, really there's nothing new about their arguments. It's just tired old arguments wrapped up in new clothes. Richard Dawkins senses the problem that, you know, there is no good explanation for the origin of human life on earth apart from a powerful creator God. So he posits this theory. He says, well, you know, maybe aliens seeded the earth with life. Now, what? I mean, this is absolutely preposterous. As Craig Evans says, this doesn't solve the problem at all. It only tries to explain a mystery with another mystery, and a highly unlikely one at that. What evidence does he have for this theory? Aliens seeded the earth with life? Richard Dawkins actually made this comment publicly on a national public radio program in 2007. So this just undermines all the facts that we do know from modern science. And in truth, recent discoveries in the area of neuroscience are even more breathtaking. When we think about how our brains operate, how we make decisions, how we create and access our own memories, that is truly fascinating. And a lot of scientific research has showed that our minds, our brains, if you will, are much more than simply physical workings. So those who want to posit a materialistic universe have a real problem with the existence of minds, with the existence of anything that's not material. And looking at all these questions convinced one very famous atheist to actually become a theist, a believer in God after all. And that is, of course, Anthony Flew. You might have heard of him. He's passed away, unfortunately, but pray for the repose of his soul. And he once debated a famous Christian scholar, maybe the world's leading expert on the resurrection of Jesus, about that very topic. Did Jesus rise from the dead? Now, most people think that Anthony Flew lost that debate, but he kept searching for the truth. And after 60 years of being an atheist, he changed his mind back in 2004. And he wrote a book called There Is a God, How the World's Most Notorious Atheist Changed His Mind. And that was published in 2007. He died shortly afterwards in 2010. Now, his fellow atheists absolutely turned on Anthony Flew when he published this book. So much for being open-minded. They said he's lost it, he's become senile in his old age, and they really didn't give his ideas any credibility. The truth of the matter is, there is a lot of reason why atheists don't want there to be a God, and they're not really willing to consider evidence for God. And it's a moral argument. It's a moral issue. James Spiegel, in his book, The Making of an Atheist, says this, quoting the atheist philosopher Thomas Nagle, "I want atheism to be true, and I am made uneasy by the fact that some of the most intelligent and well-informed people I know are religious believers. It isn't just that I don't believe in God and naturally hope that I'm right about my belief. It's that I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that." End of quote. That's a very, very honest quote. I don't want the universe to be like that. And that's really what it comes down to sometimes. It's not really a looking at the evidence for God. And even, you know, not only in scripture, but also in science, it's that they don't want it to be true because they know they're going to have to change their life. That's what it often comes down to. So science shows us that the human mind is more powerful than the greatest computer that humans have ever created. You hear a lot in today's world about AI, not Allen Iverson, the basketball player, but artificial intelligence. AI seems to be taking over the world. And a lot of people, you know, based on science fiction movies and novels, think that computers could actually take over the world one day. Well, this is actually not possible, because even the most sophisticated artificial intelligence programs that Google or Apple or any other tech company could come up with don't have the ability to be conscious. They can't make moral decisions. They're only as good as we have programmed them to be. Okay, so don't worry about science fiction dystopian novels, okay? We create these computers, and no computer, as advanced as it will ever be, could ever match up with the human mind. They're basically just mechanisms for, you know, data storage and retrieval. They're programmed to do certain functions. But the human mind is so much different. We know because of the Human Genome Project, human DNA has more than 3 billion bits of information in every human cell. This is incredible. A human being has up to 100 trillion cells. This is absolutely astounding. No wonder the scripture expresses amazement at the creative power of God. Dr. Francis Collins, who headed up the Human Genome Project, he says that the human genome is a code. And really, what a code is a language. Mindless chance speaks no language, as Craig Evans says. The human genome sequence is called the language of God by Dr. Francis Collins. It's not enough to have the information. It has to be in proper sequence, like a language, for it to make sense. And that kind of creative power can only come by God. And it's interesting that's supported by modern science. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Faith Explained. I'm Cale Clark, and we'll see you in the next show.